is from the book of the Philippians, a letter to the church at Philippi. And in it, Paul exhorts the church to rejoice despite their hardship, despite their suffering. It's Philippians chapter 4. Therefore, my brothers and sisters, whom I love and long for, my joy and crown, stand firm in the Lord. In this way, my beloved, I urge Euodia and I urge Syntyche to be of the same mind in the Lord. Yes, and I ask you also, my loyal companion, help these women, for they have struggled beside me in the work of the gospel, together with Clement and the rest of my co-workers whose names are in the book of life. Rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I will say, rejoice! Let your gentleness be known to everyone. The Lord is near. Do not worry about anything, but in everything by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. Almost needs an amen at the end of that. So, Paul telling the church to rejoice, to be at peace. We've been working through this book, Holy Habits. It's got many, many chapters, and it's based on a short passage in Acts, which is the history of the early church, and it's about how they related to each other. Today, we get to gladness and generosity. And I thought I'd start with a poem. Can we have our poem now? And just a thought from the past. I'm giving up austerity for Lent. My impulse to beat myself up in order to win God's favor seems to die hard. So I'm tackling this with a diet of joy, supplemented with a daily dose of the Lord's Supper. The original Christians didn't celebrate Eucharist with cardboard wafers and diluted grape juice. They shared communion in the midst of a common meal, and sometimes inside a genuine feast. I wonder what we've lost. So I'm giving up austerity for Lent. I once gave up champagne for Lent. That was no hardship at all. I then gave up fasting for Lent, and that was a great gladness and joy. I sort of struggled a bit with gladness and generosity, and Andrew Roberts, in his book, talks about gladness first. And he talks about being, you may relate to this, at an England cricket match where they beat New Zealand. He said it was such an unusual occasion. The joy was overflowing. Bananas were dancing in the aisles. Presumably people dressed up as bananas rather than real ones. He then goes on to talk about Pentecost and the story where the Spirit comes down and the people are filled with joy and they sing God's praises in different languages. And then he tells a story of the minister who goes to a church where they practice deep joy. And the leader of the church, or the person who welcomes him into the church, says, "This church does not do enthusiastic happiness." And he tells a story that after an hour, the preacher just gives up and says, "Could you get a message sent from the depth of your joy to your face?" and walks out. You may have been in some churches like that. And I really wrestled with this idea of gladness. What is gladness? And he, interestingly in the book, often puts the word joy in instead of gladness. So I looked up some synonyms. You know when you do your little right-hand click, and it comes up with synonyms for gladness. Happiness, joy, cheerfulness, delight, pleasure, contentment. Then I thought I'll look up some definitions. Happiness about something. The feeling when your wishes are met. Like when Crystal Palace wins, Seb. Woo, that's gladness. A pleased or joyful condition of mind. Cheerfulness. A feeling of joy and exhilaration. I did wonder if that's related to gin and tonic at all. Usually of a strong yet quiet and temperate character. This reminded me of the song, "He has made me glad, he has made me glad, I will rejoice for he has made me glad." I do remember being in one church once where it was sung like, "He has made me glad, he has made me glad." It's not quite the right tone for the song. And I was really struck by, at Messy Church, we have adopted a song for the beginning of Messy Church. And it goes like this. We had it at our pancake party on Tuesday. "Welcome everybody, it's good to see you here. Oh, welcome everybody, it's good to see you here. Welcome everybody, it's good to see you here. Gathering in this place." And you give yourself a big hug because you're gathering everybody into a big hug. Isn't that a great little song? I was thinking we should adopt that on Sunday mornings as well. There are verses as well. But I do like the actions. That idea of gladness is gathering other people together. And that sense of welcome and that openness, which fits into our second part of the talk, generosity. Roberts gives some different versions of gladness. What do you make of these? Times of ecstatic gladness, which he sees mountaintops. Plodding gladness. I was intrigued by that idea of plodding gladness. Like walking, when you're out walking and you just see the beautiful world around you. Or when you're involved in healing of someone, in a caring ministry. Or harvesting, when you're digging up your vegetables, you know, or plucking the fruit from the tree. Is that a plodding? And it's not a big exciting thing, but it's just a sense of good satisfaction. Or deep gladness. And he tells a wonderful story. If you haven't actually read the book, do get them. There's a couple of copies left. He tells this wonderful story of a man who is dying. And he and his wife have been married for a long, long time. And on the last night of his life, when it's obvious that he's going to die that night, the wife gets out all the photographs and a bottle of champagne, and they drink champagne together and they reminisce on a life well lived. It's not everybody's experience, but there's a sense of deep gladness. So gladness and generosity, he then puts the two phrases together and comes out with this comment. Could gladness and generosity be a prophetic countercultural symbol in a world of avarice and greed? Could it be something that actually says, when we've got enough, we're happy. We don't need more. He then goes on to talk about gladness and generosity lived out in forgiveness. And there's a heart-wrenching story from Rwanda when the genocide happened, of a neighbor who basically kills a family, all bar the daughter. And the daughter afterwards says this, "Anyone in the world can learn to forgive those who've injured them, however great or small that injury may be. I would never dare say that to anyone, but Immaculée, this woman, can. She saw her parents murdered by her neighbor and then still forgave." Such depths of generosity and gladness. This is the gladness that overspills to bless others. It's open-handed, open-hearted. So open-hearted as to forgive when we're wronged. And Jesus, as he dies on the cross, says, "Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they are doing." But as Christians, we're called to follow that same Jesus. And to say with him, "Forgive them, they don't know what they're doing." Are we marked and suffused with that same forgiveness. And then we've got in this reading, the third reading, the one that I did about joy, Paul mentions these two women, Euodia and Syntyche. And basically, these two women who are key members of the church are having a squabble. They're having a fight. And in the churches, there's difficulty, there's persecution, and these two are having a go at each other. And Paul thinks this is not on. Now, perhaps they're arguing about how can the church survive under this persecution? Or maybe, who can we really trust? Who are the people among us that actually are betraying us to the authorities? And Paul urges the church, help these two women to sort it out so that you can rejoice and be at peace again. And then this idea of forgiveness, living at peace, reconciliation, living in the light. Like the following of Jesus, it takes sacrifice. And in that psalm that Sue read, did you spot the interesting and strange little thing in it? It's about going up to the gates of the temple to worship. But it says in the psalm, we are his sheep. Now, why did sheep go up to the temple? They went up to be sacrificed. They didn't go up to sing God's praises. And there's a sense in which we are called to come sacrifice, to give of ourselves, to swallow our pride, to talk about uncomfortable things, to deal with pain, to get on with the nitty-gritty of life with an attitude of sacrifice and giving. But some things are so painful that they just can't come out. For example, situations of abuse. And last week, we had yet another revelation about John Vanier and the Larch community. The Larch community was built on able-bodied and people with learning difficulties living together as equals. So it wasn't that the able-bodied were looking after the others, they were living together and learning from each other. And we had that terrible revelation that Jean Vanier, the leader and founder of that group, was actually abusing six women during that time. And how do we deal with that sort of brokenness? Sam Wells, who's the minister of a big church in London, said some helpful things about the Jean Vanier situation. For example, he did some evil things alongside the many good things. And that sin can easily blind us into doing what is evil by persuading us it's okay little by little. And in a sense, in the life of Jean Vanier and in this comment from Sam Wells, we see this temptation story of Jesus. It starts with the little things. And here is the bodily need of Jesus. The devil says, turn that stone into bread. Just a little thing. And then it goes on to bodily protection. You're so important, God will save you, Jesus. And then it ends up with world power. All the kingdoms will be yours. Just worship me, the evil one. And in our life, perhaps that's how we're tempted. The small things, the bigger things, and then the massive things. I spent Monday down at Epsom Downs School talking on Lent. I told them to build up their yes muscles and to build up their no muscles during Lent. The positive things that you want to say yes to, keep saying yes to them, even if they're difficult. And the no things, the things that are bad that you want to resist, keep saying no. That's the point of Lent. What are your plus things and your minus things? What are the good things that you want to build into your life that you can practice on, especially at Lent? What are the bad things you want to get rid of? I'm not going to give you ideas because you've probably got enough of your own. But I want to finish with these three questions, and they come from the action section of this Holy Habits. First one, if you're feeling down and lacking joy, try blessing someone else. It's an idea. I suggested to the children at Epsom Downs School, they might want to consider doing secret angels for Lent. And secret angels is where you all put your name in a hat and then you pull one out, preferably not your own, and your job is to bless that person, whether it's through leaving little treats for them, encouraging them, saying positive things through notes, but you're not allowed to let them know who the angel is. That might be a bit of fun for us to do. Anonymous blessing of people. The second one he suggests is Smile Train. If you haven't come across Smile Train, it's a great little charity, and it basically seeks to address the difficulty that 200,000 babies a year are born with a cleft lip. Now, in this country, that's very easily fixed. It's done as a matter of course. But in other places around the world, children have to live like that sometimes for a long part of their life. And this charity wants to put a smile back on their face. I love that simple idea. And then thirdly, when you're in group decisions, whether that's in work, at a charity you might be part of, or a church, we could try this for church council. When a decision is made, ask, could this decision have been more generous? Could we have been more generous in what we did here? I want to finish by reading again that psalm that Sue read for us. Just sit and reflect as I read through the words. What does it say to you? What is God's Spirit saying to you this morning through these words? Shout for joy to the Lord, all the earth. Worship the Lord with gladness. Come before him with joyful songs. Know that the Lord is God. It is he who made us, and we are his. We are his people, the sheep of his pasture. Enter his gates with thanksgiving and his courts with praise. Give thanks to him and praise his name. For the Lord is good and his love endures forever. His faithfulness continues throughout all generations.